I'm wrestling, do not weep for me. Celebrate what I am. Celebrate what I have been. Celebrate what I represent. And celebrate the many ways I have impacted your life. I will survive this test as I have survived others. I am forever etched into the very fiber of all mankind. The world needs me. Time is on my side. History guarantees me. I am wrestling. Do not wait for me.
What's up, everyone? You are listening to episode number 75 of the T-Rone Funky Show, brought to you, as always, by Defense Soap, Defense You've Built, and Dahlmer Mats. Tommy, I'm out here in Colorado. I got a wrestling camp tomorrow. What are you up to?
I'm driving back from Shelby, Ohio, which is where our produce company is headquartered. Driving back to old Columbus, catching in some, we're chatting some wrestling, man. I got caught up. You know, I got criticized a little bit on Twitter for my inability to make following wrestling my full-time job. I mean, I think we all know what I would prefer to do. It's certainly not sling onion.
Sure. Well, Tommy, you're not really cool until you get criticized on Twitter. So
is that how you justify it?
Oh, 1,000%. I mean, like, if people ain't picking you on you on Twitter, then you're not doing something right.
That's right. That's right.
Now, the next thing is, like, my wrestling academy. Now that we're really starting to kick butt, all the people in Wisconsin, they'll just come at me for any reason. Like, you're just trying to make money. And I'm like, you know, well, yeah, I'm running a business. Like, what do you want me to do here?
It is weird to me. Not weird. It's actually not surprising, but it's just interesting to me that an enterprising business person within wrestling is perceived as a villain almost.
I mean, it's part of the reason why the sport hasn't been able to grow, right?
Yeah, well, you look at the most healthy sport environments and the most visible sport environments in the world, whether it be soccer or football or basketball or baseball, and there's a bunch of dudes in there trying to make some dough. And it's like chicken or the egg, you know, what comes first? But to me, it's like if you've got a property that people believe they can make a living in, then you're going to invite smart, enterprising, entrepreneurial people that will rise the tide. So
yes.
I think, hey, if someone's in there, and as long as they're doing business the right way, I mean, you still have to have business ethics. You still have to be a good person.
Well, I mean, stuff, but, right, long,
there's
long term,
wrong with making money. You know what I mean?
Sure. And long term, if you're not doing the right things, people are going to leave you anyways, and you're not making any money. So, you know, business in 2017, everything is so transparent due to social media and everything else that you have to be doing things the right way or you're going to get kicked out. But I guess back to the original point, though, Tommy, a little baptism by fire for you. If you're not getting criticized on Twitter, you're not doing enough good things.
What you're saying is that I'm just now stepping into the Ben Askren pool of criticism.
you're putting your neck out there a little bit now.
Okay, yeah, let's do it, man. I'm going to stick my neck out there. I'm going to watch match three as we're talking about it. Do me.
Boom. Okay. Hey, you got any final thoughts or, I guess, delayed thoughts about, the last episode we talked about the final wrestle-offs?
I've got just more depth to my thoughts. I don't think that my opinions changed too much, but I do think we're sending the right guy in Jordan Burroughs. I also think that as I watch Taylor Cox period two, I would not have done the caution in two. I definitely would have done the shot clock after watching it numerous times. Would have called the shot clock, but I think the real difference for David why he couldn't get off his offense wasn't necessarily because Jaden was stalling. It's because it was a slippery mess. That frustrated David. There should have been a shot clock. I think there should have been a shot clock, but the thing that Jaden did that avoided the caution in two, and, you know, the people say it was criminal, the Jaden circled to the center more oftentimes than not, and he had counterattacks at the most opportune times to avoid the egregious calls. So was he stalling? Yes. Should he have been put on the shot clock? Yes. Did David get robbed? I mean, no. To me, I think you see those calls a lot in matches. I mean, I thought it could have been called a little bit better, but it was not criminal. Jaden didn't have his track shoes on. He actually was doing what I would have done to win the match, quite honestly. And so that's my thought, is that, yes, I thought there should have been a shot clock. It was tough for David, but it wasn't criminal the way that I'm hearing on social media. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree with every statement you made there. I definitely have your back. And, you know, another thing on that match is I did not see the post-match antics. You know, I think I might have clicked over to Twitter to type something, and that's why I missed it. But now I watched it in its full view. It was freaking awesome. I loved it. People were all salty about Kale. Like, yeah, you know, we should have some freaking emotion with it. We should throw a fit. David Taylor was like, well, first he like pointed at the ref and started yelling. Then he pointed at someone. I don't know who the hell else he was pointing at over on the other side. But, I mean, I loved it. That made me kind of pumped up. And then Kale kind of like, I think he like throws the block and then he throws like a towel and then he puts his chair up on the stage.
Maybe we should.
I thought it was awesome.
So Kale gets the Bobby Knight Award. Have you ever seen that video of Bobby Knight in the 70s when he was coaching Indiana where he slinged that chair all the way across the arena?
Yeah. A lot of people are pretty salty over it, but I found it to be very entertaining. If something like that happened every major wrestling tournament, I'd encourage it.
I think we should every major event we should give out the Mongolian Coach Award of the weekend. and I think this weekend goes to Kale. And then let me tell you why it's not annoying that Kale did that. I'll tell you why. Because we have a podcast and I can talk about it.
Yeah, let's hear it.
He's never liked that.
I agree on this.
He's never liked that. So it's not manufactured. It's an authentic reaction from a guy that is never really he doesn't make a living acting that way. So when he does it, to me, it's like kind of like when my wife is mad at me, I know that I'm wrong because she never gets mad. But when I'm mad at her, it's like there's a 50% chance I'm just being an idiot. You know what I mean? And
that's
so it's like when Kale
ratio,
Sanders, when Kale Sanderson gets mad, it's like, oh man, Kale's mad. You know, and yeah, he threw a chair. If he was doing that, you know, every other weekend, I'd say, you know, that's a little bit of a clown act. But this guy has been a model citizen in wrestling, and yeah, he threw the chairs. It's out of character, but you know, I kind of liked it because it's an authentic expression of how he felt about the match. It wasn't manufactured. It wasn't something that he was doing to either get attention or get what he wanted. I think it was literally an authentic reaction from Kale Sanderson.
Good. I really enjoyed it also. So, you know, I almost think now if I was David Taylor's manager right now, and I consider David a friend, so maybe, who knows, maybe I'll give him advice. He would probably never do it. But I think he should become the bad guy now, right? Everyone needs a turn in your career at some time. Now, I'm thinking strictly of the commercialization of wrestling, but he's been the good guy for too long. And when you've been the good guy for too long, at some point, you got to become the bad guy. So he should just start saying, like, Jaden probably paid the referees. He got lucky. Just start throwing all these random excuses to make everyone mad at him. I think that, you know, and then next time he'd come out and he'd get booed.
Well, here's the thing, though, Ben, and it's the same thing that I said about Kale. What I loved about Kale's reaction to throwing the chair is that it was an authentic expression of himself. So I don't want to see David to be the villain just for the sake of being the villain. But if he's pissed off and hot and he wants to, you know, dye his hair and get a little crazy, then I'm happy about it. But if he's doing it to commercialize himself, you know, that's not my style, man.
All right. Fair enough. So let's get on to this tournament.
Let's go back to the tournament, though. Yeah, let's get to the tournament.
Sure. So let's just go weight order. You know, we kind of marked out, you and I both, we marked out some of the matches in each one of the brackets that we wanted to hit. And obviously, we've already talked about the finals, so we're not going to hit any of those. So we're going to hit the senior level mini tournament, and then we're going to go down to the junior level. So the first match we had marked out was Gilman Nato. And
yeah,
from my perspective, if Nato understands how to properly use the double ankle defense, he wins the match. I mean, he could have hung on and swung around there for another 5 seconds.
No doubt. I'm gonna go a little deeper on that. And I love Nato, and obviously I'm rooting for him for more reasons than one against Gilman. But I think, you know, the shot that Gilman took to win the match to me was so weak that it's just, you can't help but wonder if like there's a little bit of a mental warfare going on between Gilman and Nato because of their history going back all the way to late high school, early college, trying out for world teams, NCAA finals, Big Ten finals. To me, it's like he had the match won. Nato is good at locking down wins. He's good at those last 30 seconds. And, you know, in the NCAA semifinals, he got pinned. And in that match, he gave up an unnecessary takedown that was not a very good shot. I just can't help but think that maybe he just needs to, you know, cleanse himself mentally of something with Gilman. And, you know, because in the technical side, I get it, you know, but we're just going to talk about that forever. I think mentally, you know, he could afford to kind of shift his thinking a little bit on Gilman.
So then do you think Gilman has do you think Gilman has it on the opposite side where he knows he's going to beat Nato? He's not really sure how he's going to beat him, but he knows he's going to win.
I think that that could be, I don't think it started that way, but now that he's won enough, he might have a fake mental edge where he thinks he's going to beat him no matter what. And then Tomasello has the opposite working against him where it's like, to some extent he's like, man, you know, when it's close, he just finds a way. So you just got to plug that out of your mind. I mean, we've all been there with
yeah.
that we've had where it's like, you know, I mean, I've been there, you've been there.
Yep.
And I think that Nate might be there with this guy. And, you know, the cool thing is that you can overcome that with the same opponent. I believe that's possible. It's happened to me. You know what I mean? It's also happened to me where I could never block it out. So, but I think he's there a little bit with Gilman.
Yeah, 100%. I think obviously maybe it's not over for Tomasello. You know, as in these guys are the same age and Gilman's going to make the next 10 teams. I wouldn't go there. But Gilman definitely has that mental edge that you're talking about. And he kind of willed himself to that victory. So I want to talk about one other guy in this bracket, and I actually read this book about how in hindsight you think all your decisions are correct, and you forget the ones you're wrong about. but I swear I would have predicted this about Tyler Graff, the guy. He can't wrestle when the pressure's on. I mean, he's right. been a killer, and then it gets to the semifinals or it gets to the finals, and he just kind of freezes, right? And so in this one, he loses 1-1 to Gilman, and then, you know, on the backside, he comes back on the backside and goes 10-0 over Sanders, 16-5 over Waters, and 10-0 over Pirelli. I mean, it's just like not even right. challenged on the backside. So as far as skill level, the skill level is obviously there, right? There's I never tell you know, you talked about this kind of a mental defect with Tomasello, but Graff has got something serious holding him back from being able to achieve you know, victory in some of these larger tournaments.
Well, I mean, we're kind of getting deep into just wrestling overall, Ben, but I mean, the best matches I've ever wrestled, and I could be different, but the best matches I've ever wrestled, I was thinking the least.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, 100%.
You know, and that's where, actually, we're talking about books here. It's kind of a book club now, but I'm reading a book called Grit by Angela Duckworth. And
sure.
they talk in the book. They talk about the state of flow that yep. athletes or artists or musicians have, and how when it's a state of flow, it's almost like you're not working, but everything's perfect. And you know, to me, you know, there's people that can get in that mental state of flow for a number of reasons. The book talks about it, like you know, it's from repeated practice where you're actually it's the opposite of flow that can give you the flow at the right time. It's that repeated, regimented, deliberate practice that then it becomes a flowing thing. So anyways, what I'm getting at, we're kind of bouncing around here. What I'm getting at with Graff is that maybe for some reason, and a lot of people like this, in the bigger moments, he, you know, gets more deliberate with what he's doing instead of less deliberate. And on the backside of matches, or matches don't mean much, he just lets it rip.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
100%. And I actually have, I bought the book at your recommendation. And I'm reading it next, so I got this book
Good.
Called. What the hell is it called? We'll get back. It's called Thinking Fast and Slow. It's a really tough read, but it's got some really fascinating concepts. So
we should have a podcast like a book club podcast. Or something, maybe.
We really could. We really could. All right, let's go on to 61 kg. Man, this weight's taken some damage from retirement. A lot of guys who were in
right.
competitive in this weight class.
Well, who did we lose besides Coleman Scott?
Reese Humphrey for one.
Oh yeah,
Jimmy
yeah,
Kennedy
went up
two weight classes.
Yeah,
you know, so he's kind of out of them. You know, and that's three guys.
Jimmy Kennedy might be on. He's on that Eastern European plan or something, huh?
Something. I mean, he wrestled 65. You know, I was thinking in my head that, and I think I might have said this on our last podcast, but I was thinking in my head that maybe he went up to avoid Rutherford, you know, some kind of deal there, because I heard he trains at Nittany Lion. But then I was like watching, I was rewatching the Nolf Kennedy. I'm like, oh yeah, but Nolf was at 70 kg. So it's not like he gets out of anyone's way. He, you know, gets.
Well, you know, I watched the Nolf match. He didn't look undersized. And
yeah.
Nolf is not a small, you know, small 57
yeah.
kg.
So,
or sorry,
70.
70.
So, well, somehow, some way, he has gotten very, very large. And so, you know, there's kind of been an exodus from this weight class. And, you know, Maple, obviously very solid. And, you know, he was competitive in 2015. I think he lost in the finals to Coleman Scott. He kind of, I don't know, he kind of dominated this weight class. I don't know that, obviously, you know, Stieber won in the final rest loss, but I don't know if there's anyone that competitive in with him in the 61 kg bracket.
Yeah, and I'm going to say something about Maple, even though he got trashed by Logan in the second match. He gave Logan a good match in the Collegiate All-Star meet a few years ago. He gave him a good match in match one, and then he got rolled up. But he hasn't been, and I guess I'm saying this kind of shorthanded because I'm not completely privy to his training environment, but I don't think he's been in the optimal training environment on a consistent basis like one Logan Stieber's been in. But I've heard, and this is where I'm just not as plugged in as I'd like to be, but I've heard that he's going to move back. He's thinking of moving back to Oklahoma, maybe, and you know, kind of, or at the very worst, get trained by Lou Roselli more often. And
oh, that'd be the double cross for Logan Stieber, telling him all the secrets.
Yeah, well, either way, Lou keeps it pretty kosher when it comes to that. He just trains people. He doesn't like, you know, coach against guys that because he trains so many different people, but.
Well, you remember.
I could just see I could see Maple doing better against Stieber next year, which you know could be interesting.
Wow, that could be interesting. Remember four years ago, when Lou was training Stieber, Humphrey, and Bunch all at the Ohio RTC, all at 61 kg. That was pretty wild. I don't know how you guys made that one work.
Yeah. Well, he made it happen because he's got zero bias in his bone, so he just trains people. Whoever wants to work hard, show up at 8 a.m. and meet him there, and he'll train you.
Sure, I get that, you know, and I can see, I think, honestly, his perspective is a little bit easier because I hold the same perspective over my guys that I coach at AWA, but I still think, like, some of the guys that have been there for a long time, when a new guy comes in and I help them, it's like they kind of almost get slightly offended, but it's like, hey, man, whoever shows up, I'm going to help. And,
correct.
You know, I can't show biases. If you guys show up, I'm going to help you. And that's all there is to it. And obviously, if you've been here for 5 years, well, you've gotten 5 years of help. So you should be a little further along. I just got to coach. That's what I have to do. You know, I can't pick favorites.
Absolutely, man. But that's what great coaches do. I mean, they foster relationships with everybody on the team, with all those different personalities. You've got people at different weight classes, the same weight classes, you know. It's the same in other sports. I play the same position. You know, the coach has to appeal to the masses. You've got to be a guy that everybody can relate to. Everybody wants to follow. I mean, I get it.
So, Big Lou might help out Mr. Maple if Tommy's rumors are right.
Right.
All right, 65. This mini tournament is bland. Another one that has been. I know on Full Wrestling Reader, they went through all the people who used to be in the 65 kg bracket last year and who aren't this year, and the list is just, it's freaking insane, Tommy.
No doubt.
Zane essentially runs through this bracket. I mean, none of these matches were slightly competitive. He beats Jaden Ironman 14-2, beats Nick Dardanes 11-0, and then beats BJ Futrell 10-0 to set up the match with Molinaro.
No doubt.
And then did you see that? Did you see that Jordan Oliver is taunting Mr. It wasn't as bad as Full Wrestling does like to sensationalize, mainly Willie Saylor. But did you see Jordan Oliver was taunting Zane on Twitter?
Yeah, what did he say? I saw it, but I'm kind of drawing a blank.
Sure, it was something like,
you're welcome.
Uh huh. All right, well, you're welcome, and I'll see you soon. Something to that effect. But to me, it's it, to me. I don't know about you, but I have the feeling, and you know, that USADA is a spiteful organization. So if Oliver's got a positive test and he's acting like, "Hey, this ain't no big deal. I'll be back in no time," that's gonna piss him off. That's gonna make him try a little harder to find something wrong. So if I'm Jordan Oliver right now, I'm just sitting there being quiet, hoping USADA.
I mean, here's the other funny part. Here's the other funny part. You won on a freaking correct throw that sent the wrestling universe into a Twitter fire, and you're saying you're welcome. You're welcome as if you beat them by 6 points or something.
and a caution too on top of that. So So I, you know, but I don't know. USADA's not very. They're not a very forgiving organization. They're not so okay with mistakes. I did the research before for MMA, but I think MMA had as many people test positive with USADA in a 12-month period as wrestling had in the last 15 years.
I think in the history of sports.
No, I looked it up. I looked it up. It was like in the last 15 years of wrestling, and honestly, most of the wrestlers were marijuana, right? It was like not a PED. And anyway, so we've got, I mean, at least me who follows the MMA world very closely, I've gotten to get a very up-close look kind of at how USADA functions and how they work. And they're a very prideful organization, and they don't like being proven wrong. So that's why I'm saying, like, if Oliver's over there acting like, hey, it ain't no big deal, they're going to go get them.
They're going to go get them.
Yes, 100%.
Got it.
All right, 70kg. We had a little more fun here, and the best match of this bracket is in the semis, which it's Jimmy Kennedy beats Jason Nolf after being down 6-0. And if you told me Jimmy Kennedy beat Jason Nolf 8-6, I'd say I see that, no big deal. If you told me Jimmy Kennedy beat Jason Nolf after being down 6-0, 8-6, I don't think I would have believed you.
What if I told you a three-time All-American at 133 from 4 years ago beat Jason Nolf?
I don't buy it. He didn't win the Hodge Trophy or anything?
No, it's Jimmy Kennedy, dude.
Yeah. I don't buy it. That happened?
I wouldn't buy it either.
And, hey, so
yeah,
we,
Jimmy Kennedy.
We kind of texted about this earlier. And you said, you know, Nolf looks a little different. And kind of the thing that I think, because I know this happened with me when and Nolf's still really young, right? We got to remember he's a sophomore, so he's probably what?
Yeah, he's a freaking kid, man.
21, maybe 20, 21 years old.
Yeah.
I remember against, like, really elite people, against not elite people, I could really wear them out. But sometimes against really elite people, I ended up wearing myself out. Just because I wasn't able to move them the same way. And I kind of feel maybe that's what happened in this match, and that's kind of happened a few other times with Jason Nolf. And, you know, I know you have some other theories, but, is that what you saw here, or do you see something else?
No, I mean, I didn't see that as much as until after you told me. I definitely see what you're talking about. But I think that, you know, he wrestled differently. Maybe, you know, there could be a number of things, but I think he might – he's wrestling Zane – Taylor, whoever else, Casey Cunningham, I don't know who else he's grabbing a hold of in that room.
I mean, I thought Jimmy Kennedy was in there. I could be mistaken on that one.
Yeah, but when Nolf transitions to freestyle, he could be getting burnt down underneath so much in the room that he has a little bit more hesitation than I think he should go underneath people, because he was not nearly as offensive, and he also didn't go forward nearly as much as he does in collegiate. So could it be that, you know, he's a little bit too nervous about giving up his back? Maybe he's a little too nervous about the fact that he's wrestling a good opponent, but he just was not the same just buzzsaw. And when you said what you said, it made a lot of sense too. Maybe he just can't dictate the pace, or he wears himself out a little too much wrestling guys that know how to hold position against him.
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting thought, too, because obviously when we watched the Pammy match, he did give up, I believe, all of the points were off exposures that, you know, Pammy hit him with a chest lock or a crotch lift or whatever it was. Maybe that's what's happening. Maybe that is what's, you know, making him not want to pull the trigger. So I did just look at the NLWC resident athlete. I do not see Jimmy Kennedy on there, so maybe I am wrong on that one. Definitely could be.
That would be the first time you've ever been wrong. I know that much.
Well, I try to go to Google and figure it out before I say it, so you know I do have a little help on
right.
the side. Google is a PED as well for knowledge.
Correct.
Okay, so 74 kg. What did you think about Derringer Dake? Give it to me.
I was disappointed with how Dake wrestled. It's the part that kind of there's nothing about. I shouldn't say nothing, but you know, Kyle Dake the wrestler, I'm a big fan of, but some of Kyle Dake's fans just don't want to acknowledge when you know that he shuts it down so many times that when you talk about Jordan Burroughs' palm to the face stuff, it just doesn't register if you're really watching. It's like Kyle's got his own things that he's got to work on when it comes to you know not encouraging you know a real wrestling match. And I thought that's what we saw in the Dake and Derringer match. What'd you think?
Yeah, he shut it down big time. I mean, what I saw here from both guys was kind of disconcerting. You know, what I saw was Derringer shoots in right away. Dake kind of gets an easy scramble, go behind, takedown from sit in the corner. Or did he crotch lift? I don't recall. It was sit in the corner, he's in the crotch, and I can't recall if he crotch lifted him or if he went behind him. One of the two. And I think he kind of just said, hey, this guy can't score on me. I'm going to shut it down, right?
And that's exactly what he did.
And then you know, conserve energy maybe. And Derringer, in my mind, says, well, this guy's really, really freaking hard to score on. And if I dig myself a deeper hole, it's going to be harder. So I'm just going to stand around to the last 30 seconds and try to get a takedown and win the match.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it looked
like
to
me. You know, when I talk about matches like this with wrestlers of this caliber, it's just hard to really, like, pick a firm position on why they did what they did. You know what I mean? Because it's like, I don't know. I guess I'm empathizing, Ben, but like we've all been there, man.
Sure.
Big match, good opponent. You're up by two. You feel good about your defense. I'm mailing it in. I'm shutting it down. You know. And
what about Derringer's perspective?
Same thing. I've been there. I mean, we've been there. It's like, ooh, I don't like it. I'd rather I'm going to try to sneak one at the end of the period. I mean, I know it's anti Iowa for me to say that stuff, but you know. At the end of the day, wrestlers think that way. It doesn't mean it's good. Doesn't mean it's healthy. I think the best wrestlers we have, Jordan Burroughs, Kyle Snyder, Logan Stever, they do that the least, in my opinion. And when I was wrestling my best, I was thinking that way the least. But we've all been there, right?
Yeah. I mean, I guess you make a good point that every wrestler is out there for his own best interest, and he's going to try to do the thing that's going to win him that match. Yeah, and so I guess I do see both guys' perspectives.
Well, it wasn't the right – I mean, I'm not saying it's the right strategy. I actually disagree with both of their fundamental positions on why they did what they did.
Yeah.
It's just I know why they did it, and I've
sure.
done it before.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So I guess that's what it is. I guess that's what I'm trying to say.
fair enough. So, you know, people are saying, hey, this gap between Dake and Derringer is it's only 1 point now. It was 10 points, then it was 2 points, now it's 1 point. I still see Derringer's got quite a ways to go.
I don't think it's a 1 point match. I think it's Kyle's. There's a gap between Kyle and Derringer, and he chose to shut her down and just take the victory.
Yep.
It's probably not 10 points, though. You know,
no,
it's probably not
I wouldn't
10.
Say. No.
But it's a level. It's a level.
So Isaiah Martinez kind of had a rough day here. He got hammered by Dake 9-2 on the front side. There was a spectacular slam, I guess you'd say. And then he came back and he won some tough matches on the backside. 14-9 and then 9-0 over Valencia and then 9-6 over Marsteller. And this is total prediction from you. You think he's going to continue to wrestle, or do you think he's going to go fight? Because obviously you got Mark Hall's going to fill in this weight class. Burroughs ain't done. Dake's still there. Derringer's still there. Do you see him wrestling or fighting?
That is a really good question. And I would say that I think he's going to be an Olympic resident athlete for the Hawkeye Wrestling Club.
You think so? Going with Mark Perry. Wow.
I think that's what will end up happening. But by the same token, you know, it could just be for 2 years, and then when 2020 is over, he goes into MMA.
Sure. Yeah, that's definitely a likely scenario. Because I remember when we had him on the podcast, he said, you know, he hadn't made any decisions, but he did say he had an interest in mixed martial arts and was going to go explore that at some point. We just don't know when that's going to be. I wish Mark Hall would.
You know, he's got to be in a little bit of a mental funk at a very high level. He got pinned by Vincenzo Joseph in the NCAA finals, lost his chance to be a 4-time champ. He goes to the World Team Trials. There's really, you know, nothing, you know, but he gets beat by Kyle Dake in a way that's like, he's better than you right now, Isaiah. You know what I mean? Like, he wasn't beaten away, you know. And so, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think he's been beat that way, has he?
Well, if you remember a couple years back, before he even won an NCAA title, so not never went way back.
I'm not counting that. Okay. I'm talking like since he's been hanging up titles, he's never beaten away. It's like, yeah, you're not ready to beat Dake yet.
And no, so, I don't think so.
Yeah, so he's doing a little bit of high level athlete soul searching right now. That's why I like Isaiah Martinez though, because I feel like if you asked him that, he would just tell you the truth. He's just a real guy, and I think he'll come out of it. I think a lot of him, but I think he's had a tough go of it the past 3 or 4 months. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I definitely would. I mean, you know, losing the chance at the fourth title is about as big as it gets, and it was obviously in a very dramatic fashion. And you know, the thing you didn't throw in there, Tommy, was the fact that I know him and Mark Pierre were very close, so he just lost a coach, and someone he was very close to is going to be gone for his senior year, where he's coming back and looking for redemption. So, you know, I think that probably adds to it as well, right?
On top of the fact that, you know, one of the 3 or 4 guys that probably has a shot at beating him could be Alex Marinelli at Iowa.
Oh, whatever.
Hey, man, Ohio.
Whatever. On that note, Taylor over Heflin, Ohio. Ohio versus Ohio, right, in the World Trials Finals. Tommy, so you said we were texting today. You said something about this is Heflin's best year on the scene. I don't even remember wrestling freestyle before this year.
No, I was texting too fast, but
did he wrestle? Know, Am I missing it?
No, he didn't wrestle. What I'm saying is that, and I think you see this more than people talk about, is you see a guy that was good in college and is still in his prime, and he comes onto the scene, and nobody's really calibrated to wrestle him. They haven't adjusted to what he's good at, and so he steps on the scene and he's red hot for like 4 or 5 months, and then everybody calibrates to what he's got, and then it becomes a little bit more of a ticky-tack deal. And sure. What I was saying is I could see this being Nick Heflin's best year on the scene, saying that going forward, if he stays on the scene, that his best year was this year. You know what I mean? I can see that. I love him. He's a Buckeye. He's from Ohio. I hope I'm wrong, but I can just see that happening.
Yeah, I mean, and to couple that, he definitely has a very unique style for freestyle, right? You know, we don't see a lot of guys at the senior level with scoring primarily off
chest
wraps.
I'll give you a good example. I thought Nick Marable was that way a little bit.
Oh, sure.
And
I can see that.
He jumped on the scene. I think his best years were when he first got on the scene, not when he was 3 or 4 years into the scene. And so, you know, there's those type of guys. You know, it happens every now and again.
Yeah, definitely. So I liked what he was doing. I think the chest wrap and the headlock are kind of a lost art. I really So I like seeing someone use those things so skillfully as he is. Who are we going to have? So this is an interesting way to me because Gabe Dean and Bo Nickel both chose not to compete, which neither one of them gave really a statement of, hey, this is why I'm not wrestling. But they didn't compete. I have no idea. And so that, you know, if those two guys don't continue on, you know, really training and competing in freestyle a lot, that's obviously going to hurt this weight class moving forward.
I think Gabe Dean's going to wrestle. I think he probably needed a mental break. My senior year, I don't know how your senior year was, but when for some reason your senior year, it's you just feel a little bit more compelled to take a deep breath.
Yeah.
So in my senior year, when I concluded my senior year, it was in March, obviously. And the Olympic trials.
is that when you end your senior year?
Yeah. The 2004 Olympic trials were in May.
Yeah.
And it took every ounce of me. It took every ounce of me mentally to stay focused and train through May for the Olympic trials. You know, if it was a world team year, I think I would have done what Gabe Dean did, which been like, eh. I'm gonna reset my mind here and get ready. Yeah, I think that some people probably live that way, where it's like, I'm gonna reset. I got a new level to go down to, take a break here, lift, run, wrestle, but not really put myself on the line and be ready to rock in the fall. And I think that's what Gabe Dean's gonna do.
Sure. Okay. Let's give these last two answers. 97 kg. Gadsden wins easy. This bracket, Tommy, if you could make this weight, you could be competitive in this bracket today. It's just, I don't even know.
Well, if I made that weight, my wife would be a big fan.
Well, I mean, so you're going to the Midlands this year. You might as well just follow on and wrestle in the Open next year at 97.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
give Snyder a little payback.
Don't call it a comeback. Don't call it a comeback, Ben.
Snyder, watch your back. Tommy's coming. all right, and then at heavyweight, Don Bradley kind of goes through the bracket pretty easy. 5-1 over Telford, 8-1 over Tony Nelson. Tommy, you might be able to be in the finals of this bracket too.
Don't call it a comeback. Call it a comeback.
All right, you got any other thoughts on the senior level tournament before we get the juniors?
No, I'm good, man. I'm good. I'm ready to move on.
All right.
I thought we got it in, though. I thought we did a good job.
Sweet. So 46 kg. Or 50, that's the littlest weight class. Tommy, I have this feeling that this weight should fairly be eliminated because I looked at the world level. It's the least well-attended bracket. And they can't even get people to show up, Tommy. They got three people to show up for this bracket. Three people.
Right.
Like, come on, man. Anyways, Muay Kinzelman wins it. He's going to TSOU. I thought you'd be pretty happy to hear that.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm very excited. And they kind of mapped him. At least in my mind, you know, I know the prognosticators and the analysts know who this guy is, but I didn't know him until he committed. I was happy to know the Buckeyes sought him out all the way in Colorado and got it done.
Yep, he's pretty damn tough. He won fairly easily in this series, and man, that's just such a small weight class. Like I said, there's only three people that showed up. It's kind of almost difficult to talk about that weight class.
Yeah, no doubt. Other than the guy who won the Buckeye.
All right. Dayton Fix, what do you got to say about him?
He's an animal. He's a man already, which tells me that, if John wants to put him in, I don't know the schematics of their lineup next year, if they even need him, but he's ready. He's ready right now, I'm telling you that. I mean, he's top four at 125, in my opinion.
Yeah, I could see this. You know, that's another one, though. He's obviously, this is day before weigh-ins. He's kind of big.
Right.
Or he feels big to me, you know, when I look at him. And so,
right.
You know, can he make 125 on a one-hour win? I would think, just looking at him, it's my guess. I think he slots a little better at 133, but honestly, I think he's competitive there as well. I think he's definitely
competitive. Well, yeah, I agree. I think he's competitive at 33, and I do think he's a little big for 25, but knowing what we know about John Smith and how he interprets what weight people should go, I mean, I'm thinking Fix is going 25, right?
Oh, God. That's the one thing. If there's one criticism of John Smith, is he makes these guys cut so much damn weight. And sometimes it makes sense when it fits into certain brackets, right? But
right.
There's a lot of times. I mean, what Mark Munoz told that story about how he was at 184, and he got really big, like 220 or something, right? And he comes back. And John says, yeah, I want you to go 174. And Mark's like, nope, I'm going 197. And he won the national title at 197, right?
There you go. Yep.
So, and it's one, I mean, now, and you look at, like, my nemesis, you look at Chris Pendleton, he's freaking gigantic. I mean.
Correct.
He's got me by 30 pounds easy now. And it's not like.
Right. And he's not fat.
He's huge. He's a big, very, very big guy.
Right, exactly.
So, so John does make him cut quite a bit of weight down there, but, he seems to do a pretty good job coaching. right? All right, 132. This bracket was good. It's Austin Gomez, Vito Arruja in the finals. This match is fun. You know, Arruja got up early, and this is one of those guys. Kind of, I think I said this about Ja'Cory Teamer when we talked about him two episodes ago. Of, you know, kind of
upright,
but just he's so much better than most people, and he's so technical that he wins without a good fight. You know, and when someone puts up a fight, does he have that toughness and the tenacity and the gas tank to kick it into top gear and crank it out? You know, and in this case. Vitaly Arruja, he didn't. He kind of just flailed around in the second period while Gomez was putting up more and more points.
Yeah, no doubt. But I am very impressed with the technical skills that Arruja has. Gomez is tough too. I mean, it was good. I'd say if I had to pick a guy that I'm hitching my wagon to in the collegiate years, I'd say Arruja.
Really?
Is it Rujev or Arruja?
It's Arruja.
Okay, got it.
Yeah. Wow, that's interesting. I would actually go the other way. Gomez, you know, and I kind of thought Gomez was, to me, he used a lot of headlocks and that type of stuff in youth wrestling. I got to see him a lot because he's in Illinois, you know. And so I thought he was going to have less success as he got older, but he's continued to have quite a bit of success. And then the final wrestle-off between McKee and Gomez was very interesting because the first match is a total blowout. I mean, I want to say – hold on, let me click over. So I don't want to tell you the wrong results here. I want to say it took about a minute and a half to 2 minutes. And I thought, oh, okay, that's how the second – it took two minutes. And so I thought, hey, that's probably how the next couple matches are going to go. But – Gomez takes the next one 11-8 in a barn burner, and then, you know, the last one McKee comes back and wins, but it was a freaking battle. So you know, Gomez found a way to get in there and make it competitive, and you know, he even won a match, obviously. So I think that says a lot about him, and I kind of think maybe I was undervaluing him. I think he's gonna be a huge asset to Iowa State in the next couple of years.
No doubt. I'm with you, man. Stud.
Okay, so at 66 kilo, let's see how much time we got left. Okay, we're doing pretty good in time. I think we're going to finish right on time. 66 kg, I don't really have a huge amount to say. The finals was kind of lopsided. The one question I have for you here. Now, so at the junior level, at the Nationals, they have a 63 kg, a 66, and a 70, right? Obviously, those are not world championships weights, so they go down to 60, 66, 74. Well, it appears to me that everyone decided that they wanted to wrestle this freaking weight class, because this weight class, it has a round of 32, Tommy.
Yep.
And so Pat Lugo had to wrestle five matches in the mini tournament, which almost all of them went the distance. So the first one he won 14-6. The second one he won 13.
Well, I know what you're getting at. Here's my question to you. Embarrassing, I didn't know this. Did they have the challenge finals that night, or did they have the next day?
No, same day.
Yeah, you probably got to chop it down, but I don't think you should limit the participants, because it is a developmental age group.
Yeah.
And I don't think you should limit the participants, but you should account for the fact that the guy coming out of the mini had so many matches that it just becomes really difficult for him to make the team, and we are trying to assemble the best team, so I would put that match a day later, even if the tournament's still going on, like let's say women are the next day or someone, you know, just make that the next day, figure something out. But I would not limit the participants. I wouldn't do that.
So the bracket, I just counted the numbers. The bracket below this, 60 kg, had 10 participants. The one above it has 8 participants. And this bracket's got 24 participants. And I mean, that. So it's like all those other in-between weight classes, like all of them went to this one. And so when you're looking at, like I said, so you went.
Well, five matches during the day against tough competition, only to wrestle the best guy, the best two out of three.
Yeah.
That's a tough day at the office.
And he didn't blow anyone out, Tommy. So he won 14-6. He won 13-3, but it was at the 6 minute mark. He won 12-3, 13-3 in 5 minutes and 24 seconds. And then he won 8-6. So he essentially has five full matches. It ain't like they went out there and rolled someone up in a minute. You know, that's a gigantic difference. So, Yeah, I just, you know what, in the finals, it looked like he was dead to me. It looked like he didn't have much left.
Right, right.
And
well, no doubt.
So
I didn't watch that one, but no doubt.
I don't know how you know, if you're going to add in those non-world weight classes, I don't know how you would go about reducing the amount of participants, but I think, man, 24 is too big if you're going to have the guy wrestle the two out of three finals that same day. Unacceptable.
I would just have the junior challenge, junior mini tournament, the day before the last day of the tournament. And if you run into an issue where one of the weight classes had too many, just before the day even starts, you say, hey, we're going to have the challenge tournament tomorrow for you guys. We'll pay for your flights, changes, and a hotel stay, whatever. We're going to find out who the best freaking junior guy is.
Sure.
And just do it that way.
Yeah, that seems very fair to me, and I think that's the way that should go. All right, so Ryan Deacon makes a team there, beats Pat Lugo. Pat Lugo didn't look like he had much left in the finals. 74 kg, your guy Marinelli kind of runs through the mini tournament, then he runs into the buzzsaw that is Mark Hall. He gets tech quickly in the first match, and then second match, you know, he stays relatively competitive. I want to say it was 9-3. I'm going to look it up. Are you really thinking he could be Alex Marinelli can be that competitive at the NCAA level next year? I mean, I'm not talking like a fifth,
well,
sixth, seventh, eighth. I'm talking like, can he challenge for a title?
As a freshman, probably not, but I will tell you that his best chance is in the collegiate style of wrestling. There's no doubt about it. I think he's going to be top four next year at 165.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, really, top four.
We got Imar, we got Vincenzo. Who else do we got?
Taylor Massa. Or Logan. Sorry, not Taylor.
Yeah, I'm not putting him above those three.
And then who else is there? I don't know. That was the first thing that came to my mind.
Yeah, well, I put Marinelli at four, unless you can find some other names for me.
I'll have to go do my research. All right, 84. If Mark Hall's good, probably going to win another world title. 84 kg, Nick Renan runs through the mini tournament, but he runs into Zahid Valencia in the finals, and Zahid kind of blows.
I think Zahid is huge.
He's not. I actually so I had this conversation with an Arizona State assistant coach, Lee Pritz. I said, "Are they bumping up? What's the deal?" He's like, "They're not that. He said, "Legitimately, they're not that big for their weight class." And I was like, "That's
really."
It seems ridiculous. They look big, but I guess they're not that big. So apparently they're not bumping up next year.
Zahid looks massive to me.
Yeah, apparently they're not. Apparently he doesn't have to cut any weight for that weight class.
So we got Zahid, Hall, and Bojo all at the same weight next year.
Yes. It's a good weight class.
Yeah, it is.
Nice. All right, next weight class. Your boy, Colin Moore. This guy's like a bull in the china shop, you know. He did get fucking junked around for a few points in the second match, but dude, just like I remember a long time ago you described where he just kept shooting. He just keeps shooting, like just shooting and shooting and
he
shooting.
He just doesn't stop shooting.
It just doesn't
stop.
He's like
a giant. He's like a giant Logan Stieber, obviously not as competitive of a way, but like you know how Logan just sometimes you're like he just. Doesn't stop shooting and grabbing onto the leg. I mean, Colin Moore's like that at the upper weight. He's having amazing success.
Yeah, he's impressive. Obviously, he's going to be the top dog or kind of the number one guy headed into the NCAA in the season next year. It's going to be interesting to see who can kind of step up and give him a challenge. Because
I also put together the Little Eagle Wrestling Camp this week. We had 22 kids sign up. And we had Colin Moore, Luke Pletcher, Bo Jordan, and Mick Jordan combined show
well,
some moves.
Damn, that's a hell of a little
yeah, and all four of these guys got rave reviews. Not one of them, they got rave, because I wasn't there, I was working, but they got rave reviews from the parents. But Colin Moore was the parent favorite for how he engaged with the kids, so I thought
really?
I'd add that part in there, too.
So not
yeah.
only does he shoot a lot, but he's really good with kids,
he's
too.
He's good with kids.
All right, ladies, watch out. All right. How good is Gable Stevenson?
Personally, I think he's phenomenal. He's big enough to be a good size heavyweight. He's super athletic. He's got a left leg lead and a no bend. You think that that's just kind of immaterial to you? But
for God's sakes, Tommy.
To me, especially at those weight classes, he's like tall enough, but he's also short enough to be tough to score on. I think he's legendary, man. I think he's going to be legendary.
Yeah, you know, I believe he's still cadet eligible. As crazy as that sounds, I think. I think he is.
How good do you think he is?
This is how good I think he is, Tommy. You know, when I get in there and play with my high school kids and wrestle with them, you know, I try to wrestle at their speed, right? But when I want to or when I feel like it, I got a couple more speeds I can go, right? And we're just me and them, although they're very good high school wrestlers, we're moving at different speeds, right? That's what I felt like when I was watching Gable Stevenson wrestle Jordan Wood, but Gable Stevens is younger. Stevenson is younger by 2 or 3 years. Jordan Wood has placed at the world level, I believe, as a cadet, maybe as a junior. So I mean, he's looking like he's moving at a different speed than Jordan Wood is, and Jordan Wood's a very good heavyweight.
Correct.
So it's like, shit, I mean, he's only a junior in high school still. I mean, I don't believe he's old for his grade either. I think he's young for his grade.
Yeah, no, he's got the goods, man. I've only watched him like 4 or 5 times. I did watch his cadet world final against the Russian, which was the most telling to me that he's going to be good for a lot of reasons, but I'm very impressed. I wish I wasn't, because he's going to Minnesota, he's going to the Big Ten, and Ohio State has a very good heavyweight prospect in Singletary.
Singletary's going to be a heavyweight, like, for sure.
What's that?
He's going to be a heavyweight?
Singletary, I've never met him, never been next to him. But yeah, he looks like he's going to be a heavyweight to me, and I think that's what they're planning. Okay. I think that's what they're planning. But,
Gable.
But I like this Stevenson. He's scary.
He's good. So, okay. I think in 2 years he could step in and challenge for an NCAA title. Maybe even next year he could say, well, obviously, no, Kyle's there, so the answer is no. But so Kyle will be gone in 2 years. So maybe he can.
Kyle's gone, Kuhn is gone. I mean,
it's possible.
I'm trying to think who I'd put ahead of him.
Yeah, I'd have to go over to the rankings and figure it out.
I would put Kuhn ahead of him, but Kuhn will be gone.
Yeah, he'll be gone. He'll be out, and so will Snyder. That's all I got. You know, it took us 2 episodes to get through this. There was a lot of stuff there. I kind of wish something like this was every weekend. It really gives us a lot to talk about.
You know what we have to remember to do, and we can talk about this offline, but might as well share with our people. We've got to get press passes and set up shop for the NCAAs at Cleveland so we can do live commentary the whole weekend down where all the media guys do that. Do you think we can get away with that?
Except when you want to get your nachos. Then we're off air.
Except for I don't want to do what?
When you want to go get your nachos. Remember, we talked about this, and you said, like, I'll do it, but I'm not going to be on their schedule. I'm going to be on my schedule, and if I want to go get nachos or a piece of pizza, then I'm out.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, and if it's St. Patty's Day and I've got, like, you know, a green T-shirt on and I've had a few cold ones going into the round, you know, our fans are going to have to deal with it, right?
That'll make it more entertaining, I think.
That'll be even
better. Well, all right, Tommy. I know you got somewhere to go, so that's going to be it for episode 75. You have a great day, and I'll talk to you next time.
You too, my brother.
You are listening to the T. Rowe and Funky Show, and it is brought to you by Defense Soap. Defend what you've built. Tommy, I got to say, I tried these products. He shipped me a box. I love them. I've had ringworm issues for a long time. I'm looking forward to putting these in my repertoire and hoping the ringworm does not come back ever.
No doubt, Ben. And to top that off, the company was created by wrestlers. Guy Seiko wrestled at Cleveland State University. His son was an All-American in Virginia, so these people really get it. They know what the wrestling community needs.